There's no guarantee of success, but right now the status quo isn't working. Time is not on our side.
The U.S. Secretary of State presses a sense of urgency on North Korea. It's Monday, March 20th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We invite you to check us out online right now on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Vietnamese fishermen aim for protection. China defends against Islamic State. Australia's Great Barrier Reef under great threat. Surviving Myanmar snakes. We get started right now on VOA Asia. Concerns about North Korea and its increasingly threatening behavior dominated discussions during U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's first trip to Asia, which included stops in Japan, South Korea, and China. The administration of Donald Trump is looking for a new way forward on issues, and clearly finding a way to work together with China on the issue is key. VOA's Nike Ching has more from Beijing.
North Korea tested a high-thrust rocket engine, celebrating what it called the new birth of its rocket industry, just as Secretary Tillerson was in China wrapping up his visit to Asia. News of the test came not long before he met with Chinese President Xi Jinping. During his visit, he stressed that the U.S. and China both feel a sense of urgency about the situation with North Korea.
We've committed ourselves to do everything we can to prevent any type of conflict from breaking out. And we view there are a number of steps that we can take that are in front of us.
He did not say what steps they might take, and it's still unclear whether they see eye to eye on the issue. Before Tillerson arrived in Beijing, President Donald Trump tweeted that China is not doing enough. Beijing says it's everyone's job to implement the sanctions and restart talks. Earlier in Seoul, Tillerson stated that 20 years of diplomatic and other efforts to end North Korea's nuclear programs have failed. He also said all options are on the table, including military measures. Some argue it's not a tougher approach that is needed, but direct talks without preconditions. Analyst James McKeon spoke with VOA via Skype.
Of course, there's no guarantee of success, but right now the status quo isn't working. Time is not on our side. The North Koreans continue to advance their nuclear and ballistic missile capabilities to the point where they're now not necessarily testing their missiles, they're showing off their missiles' capabilities.
North Korea conducted its latest missile test earlier this month. Working together to get the North to change course is something U.S. and China's leaders need to work out face to face. Secretary Tillerson discussed a future visit with Xi Sunday. The meeting between Xi and Trump could take place as early as next month. Nike Ching, VOA News, Beijing.
Be sure to see Nike Ching's story and read much more about it on VOA Asia Facebook as well as on our VOA mobile app. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. The United States and China agree to work together on North Korea. North Korea tests a powerful new rocket engine. Candy, makeup, and K-pop get doused amid China's ire over THAAD missile system. Malaysia says more arrests expected in Kim Jong-nam death. Indigenous Indonesians at a crossroads. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. This year, China is again planning to impose a fishing moratorium across much of the South China Sea, which Beijing says is its territory, despite claimants from several other South Asian nations. Fishing crews from Vietnam have been venturing far from their traditional waters to make their catches, but sometimes they've sailed into dangerous areas where they have been attacked, kidnapped, and even killed. Vietnam recently rejected a proposal by Manila in the Philippines to arm fishing fleets for protection. VOA Vietnamese reporter Trung Nguyen joins us to dive deeper into the many facets of this developing story.
According to Philippine media last week, the Defense Secretary, Delphine Lorenzana, he talked to the Vietnamese ambassador to Manila a while ago, saying that Vietnam should allow the arming of its fishing fleet. But the proposal was turned down. The reason why he made that suggestion is that, according to the defense chief of the Philippines, the number of kidnapped victims by rebel group Abu Sayyaf has nearly doubled during the Duterte administration. So that's why he made the recommendation to the Vietnamese ambassador to Manila to arm Vietnamese fishermen to defend themselves against Abu Sayyaf, because Vietnamese victims account for the largest number of hostages currently in Abu Sayyaf's hands.
Are these Vietnamese fishing fleets that are operating near the Philippines, or is Abu Sayyaf kind of going out into other areas and capturing these people?
Because of the disputes over the South China Sea, in which Vietnam, the Philippines, China, and other countries are claimants, because of that dispute and also the fishing ban by Beijing over the last few years. So Vietnamese fishermen, they venture out beyond their traditional fishing grounds to do their work. So that's why a lot of them venture further in the South China Sea, and they have become victims of the Abu Sayyaf.
In some of these dangerous waters, why would Vietnam not want these fleets to be armed?
I talked to a representative from the Vietnamese Association of Fisheries, and he told me that the government has not instructed his organization about the decision to arm Vietnamese fishermen. Also, there are some concerns among Vietnamese officials that arming the fishermen may lead to serious situation at sea when they are out of control.
How do the fishermen feel about this? Some may want it, some may not.
Yes, that's right. I talked to one fisherman who was attacked at sea 2 years ago. I talked to him right after he returned to shore from the trip, and he told me at that time that he would like to be armed to defend himself and other fishing crews on his vessels against hijackers or even somebody else who tried to attack them. He told me at that time, and I called him again last week, asking him about whether the Vietnamese government has given him any green light to be armed. He told me that he hasn't received any instruction from the authorities, but he would still like to be armed to defend himself. I also talked to one representative from the Vietnamese embassy in Manila, asking for their comments regarding the Philippine Defense Secretary's statement about the proposal extended to Vietnamese ambassador. But they asked me to write to them through email. And until now, I haven't received any response from them regarding the defense chief's statement.
Trung Nguyen from our Vietnamese service. Trung, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's always my pleasure to talk to you.
Stay with VOA Asia as China confronts the threat from Islamic State. Happening now in Asia, South Korea is testing a system to raise the Sewol ferry that sank nearly 3 years ago, killing more than 300 people, most of them children. It hopes to surface the vessel and recover the last 9 bodies. The Sewol rests 44 meters underwater off the southwestern island of Jindo. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always happy to have you with us today on VOA Asia. The Islamic State terror group released a video earlier this month explicitly threatening China with attacks on its home soil. Analysts say that as China seeks to expand influence across Central Asia, the Middle East, and Africa, its nationals are being exposed to a greater terror threat, and Beijing is having to adapt its response. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
This video purports to show ethnic Uyghurs fighting for Islamic State in Iraq. They threaten to return home to China and shed what they call rivers of blood. Analysts say the propaganda is part of IS attempts to fight back in the face of heavy losses in Iraq and Syria.
If it's able to stay, it's fighting forwards. It's got these groups of people from all over the world who are there fighting alongside them to ultimately return home and do horrible things there, then, you know, you're painting a much stronger narrative and one which the group wants to project.
The video invokes allegations that Beijing persecutes the majority Muslim Uyghurs in the western province of Xinjiang. China tightly controls access to the region, so verifying reports of attacks is difficult.
At least two potential attacks so far and a number of other sort of odd incidents taking place. And we've seen the government, the governor in Xinjiang province actually having a very heavy sort of clampdown and a very visible escalation of the sort of security presence in the region, all of which suggests that China is increasingly concerned about the problems related to terrorism and extremism, and clearly IS is part of that picture.
Islamic State may be a common enemy, but there has been little coordination between China and the global coalition fighting the group, says analyst Mathieu Duchatel, who spoke to VOA via Skype from Paris.
China wants support from Western states on its policies in Xinjiang. China considers that the anti-terror or counter-terror efforts that it is leading in Xinjiang are not being endorsed by countries in the West. And the response in Europe, at least, is that there is a lack of transparency.
Earlier this month, Chinese President Xi Jinping hosted leaders of minority groups in Beijing, promoting an image of ethnic harmony. But human rights groups accused China of oppressing the Uyghur population. In turn, Beijing accuses the West of double standards.
Terrorism, extremism and separatism are put together in the same basket.
China has adopted a new law allowing military deployment overseas on anti-terror missions, but working alongside either Western or Russian forces against Islamic State remains unlikely.
The long-standing approach to terrorist risks for China has been to avoid attracting too much attention and becoming a target.
Duchatel says that approach may change as Chinese citizens are exposed to a greater terror risk across the globe. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte says he welcomes being put on trial by the International Criminal Court over his bloody war on drugs. More than 8,000 people have died during his anti-drugs campaign. Duterte says he's never instructed security forces to kill suspects not resisting arrest. Read more on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia continues as new research is warning that Australia's Great Barrier Reef can only be saved if urgent steps are taken to tackle climate change. The study appears in the journal Nature. As Phil Mercer reports from Sydney, the report indicates parts of the world's largest coral system will never fully recover from repeated bleaching, which is caused by spikes in the water temperature.
The Great Barrier Reef faces localized threats, such as the runoff of pesticides from farms and overfishing. But scientists believe its future depends on immediate efforts to reduce global warming. They say last year's bleaching of large parts of the reef was the worst on record. There's evidence that a similar event is occurring this year. Corals begin to starve once they bleach, the main cause of which is heat stress resulting from high sea temperatures. The World Heritage body UNESCO has threatened to put the Great Barrier Reef on its in danger list because of mounting concerns over its health. In response, the Queensland state government has released a discussion paper to look at ways to improve water quality on the reef, which is contaminated by fertilisers and pesticides from farms near the coast. Nick Chashler from the environment group Greenpeace says while localised threats must be addressed, so must the broader issue of climate change.
Poor water quality is a huge threat to the health of the Great Barrier Reef. There's no denying that. And that comes from activities like agriculture and agricultural runoff into the reef. It also comes from activities like the industrial ports that are all up and down the Queensland coastline. But they can't be viewed in isolation. At the core of that has to be the recognition that global warming is what is killing the reef.
The Great Barrier Reef stretches for 2,300 kilometres down Australia's northeast coast. It's home to a wondrous array of wildlife, including more than 130 species of sharks, 500 types of worms, and 1,600 varieties of fish. The reef pumps more than $4 billion into the Australian economy and employs 63,000 people, mostly in the tourism industry. Although some travel groups believe the damage inflicted on the coral system has been exaggerated, which has in turn seen many travellers from Europe and the United States cancel their trips. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In a moment, VOA Asia moves to land to deal with deadly snakes. Developing at this hour in Asia, Malaysian state media say police are expected to make a few more arrests, including a, quote, important person, in connection with the murder last month of Kim Jong-nam, the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Police Chief Khalid Abu Bakr declined to elaborate on details. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Australian scientists working with counterparts in Myanmar are hoping to reduce Myanmar's high death toll from snake bites in rural communities, especially among vulnerable populations facing inadequate emergency care. The official toll from snake bites in Myanmar is 600 deaths a year out of some 13,000 cases among a rural population dependent on rice harvesting for a living. Chen O'Pain is a renal specialist at the Royal Adelaide Hospital in South Australia.
One of the most feared complications of that snake bite is, in fact, kidney failure, so much so that something like, and even that's true even to this day, something like 70% of patients with acute kidney failure in that country is due to this snake bite. So it is an enormous problem.
Stacks of rice and the rice paddy fields themselves lure rats and mice and, in turn, draw snakes, the most venomous being the Russell's vipers and cobras. The hope for survival is often challenged by long distances over poor roads and infrastructure to reach life-saving medical treatment. Chen Ope says speedy access to emergency medical treatment is crucial.
So all these factors accumulate to a long delay between bite and administration of antivenom. So to help them, we have to help them produce more antivenom, to help them produce, to get the antivenom to where it's required, to help them keep the antivenom in the refrigerator, and to help the health professionals.
The project is also involved ensuring higher survival rates of horses used in the production of the antivenom after being injected with snake venom. High mortality rates were evident among the horses due to anemia, nutritional problems, and veterinary practices. The changes in practice included learning the skills developed by Myanmar horse handlers.
In the last 10 months, the average horse mortality is something like 6 or 7 per month, compared to 50 per month. And this is very good news for not only horses, but for human patients who may need antivenom, because the more horses survive per month, the more antivenom vials of antivenom you can produce.
And as a result, production of antivenom has risen sharply to 100,000 vials from 60,000 vials. The team's work, part of a $1.77 million effort begun in 2014, with the support by the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, and working with Myanmar's Ministries of Industry and Health, is focused on the northern city of Mandalay. It's a region that faces an estimated 700 to 800 snake bite victims each year. The Australian team, which includes Afzal Mahmood, a senior lecturer in public health at the University of Adelaide, is working with specialists in Myanmar and local partners on guidelines, protocols, and standard operating procedures for the health sector. Mahmood tells VOA a recent survey indicated the rate of snake bites is considerably higher than official figures.
This is not a new phenomenon. It happens because many people do not reach the health system where the recording takes place. Some people get treated by the traditional healers. Some may die without actually reaching the health system. And some may suffer and die get healed.
He says the program has succeeded in boosting the skills among the local medical and non-medical community. The work has reached about 150 villages, with local community meetings targeting around 7,000 people to help promote awareness of snake bite treatments. The goal, the scientists say, is to shorten the time of treatment by providing solar-powered refrigerators near local communities with supplies of anti-venom. Victims of snake bites are among Myanmar's poorest, and they often face long periods of hospitalization, leaving their families facing high medical bills, often an equivalent to several months of real earnings. The project aims to provide a model that can be applied elsewhere in Myanmar and become a sustainable method of treatments. We hope everything is fine in your corner of the world as you've been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to check us out on Facebook at VOA Asia. And we also invite you to download our podcast and take VOA Asia wherever you happen to roam. You can also find us at voanews.com, where we stream daily. We'd like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Patrick Dea, and managing editor, Diane Gao, along with our VOA Asia team, including Steve Miller and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington, wishing you a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In December, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani signed a Charter of Citizens' Rights, supposedly to serve as a guide for the government in observance and advancement of the fundamental rights of the nation of Iran. In it, the government pledged, among other provisions, non-discrimination and equality before the law, irrespective of religion. In recent days, that pledge appears to have been broken repeatedly. The New York-based Center for Human Rights in Iran reports that one of the seven Baha'i leaders who were arrested in 2008 and are serving a 10-year prison sentence because of their faith has not been accorded the early release he is entitled to under the law. His family says that Behruz Tavakoli, an elderly former Baha'i community leader who has spent nearly 9 years in prison for his faith, suffers from heart disease and is in urgent need of an operation and care he cannot get in prison. Prisoners of conscience are often denied medical care in Iran, and Baha'is remain one of the most persecuted religious minorities in the country. In late February, Mohabbat News reports that the IRGC arrested two Christian converts, a mother and her son, Anousheh Rezabakhsh and Sohail Zarkarzadeh Sani, in the city of Urumiya. Their Bibles and other religious literature were seized in the raid. UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in Iran, Asma Jahangir, expressed concern in her recent report over the targeting and harsh treatment of Iranian Christians from Muslim backgrounds, as well as members of various Sufi groups considered deviant faiths. In yet another case, the Center for Human Rights in Iran notes that Muhammad Ali Tahiri, founder of a spiritual arts and healing group, who was supposed to be released from prison in May 2016 after serving a 5-year sentence for insulting the sacred, has again been tried on a charge for which he had previously been acquitted, corruption on earth, which could result in the death penalty. President Donald Trump has noted that religious freedom, like all fundamental human rights, is not a gift from government.
Freedom of religion is a sacred right, but it is also a right under threat all around us. And the world is under serious, serious threat in so many different ways.
It is past time the Iranian government lives up to its Charter of Civil Rights, as well as its long-standing international obligations to respect the religious freedom of the Iranian people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.